The JTA looks to the future with a new phase of the First Coast Flyer. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. Just ahead, the CEO of JTA, Nat Ford, here in studio to talk about the future of transportation in Jacksonville and take your calls. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, a conversation with celebrity chef Kenny Gilbert. Find out what he's cooking up, plus The Spectator with a few ideas for your weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, rapid transit on the First Coast is expanding. The Jacksonville Transportation Authority is now implementing the second phase of its First Coast Flyer bus rapid transit program. The new Blue Line will launch Monday, December 5th. What's it mean for transportation in this area? What's the future? Nat Ford is the CEO of the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, and he's here in studio to explain and connect with you on the phone and social media. Nat Ford, good morning.
Good morning. Good. Thanks for having me here.
So good to have you on the show. What are your questions for JTA's CEO, Nat Ford, as we talk about the First Coast Flyer, the Blue Line, and more? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on Facebook. Already getting lots of tweets from all of you. We'll get to those in a little bit. But first, exciting news as the second phase of the First Coast Flyer is getting ready to roll out. What can we look forward to?
Well, the JTA, we've been hard at work at improving the quality of service we provide with our transit system. And last year, this time, December of last year, we launched the Green Line, which was the first segment of our First Coast Flyer Bus Rapid Transit Network, which features premium service in the form of less bus stops, much more frequent service. We actually have First Coast Flyer operates on a 10-minute frequency, which, years ago, that was unheard of here in our community, but it's very direct, 10-minute service. That was the first leg on the North Line down Lem Turner from 295 to downtown. Mm-hmm. And then the Blue Line will launch this December, the second phase of that, and that will be taking our riders down to Avenues Walk using Phillips Highway. And so now we have two segments, then followed with an East Line and a Southwest Line.
So we'll have the North and South Spine.
Yes.
And then you're going to focus on the East and West, sort of, so it'll almost make like a cross with these,
exactly,
these spokes going out from downtown. Now, this is going to be the largest bus rapid transit system of its kind in the Southeast, and you're using CNG buses, compressed natural gas.
Yes, that's right.
What's the riding experience going to be like for everyone that takes it?
We're very proud to say that our on-time performance on the First Coast Flyer is at 93%. We have over half a million riders at this juncture, so that's about 2,100 riders every day, and so it is a premium service. Wi-Fi equipped buses, so that our passengers are able to work and be productive while they're riding the bus. And on top of that, I think just the real-time passenger information at each one of these stops. We actually run this service more like a rail line in terms of its operation. Transit signal priority, so it has priority at traffic signals, and so the buses are able to move much quicker than normal automobile traffic.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking transit this morning with JTA's Nat Ford. Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, when we talk about the First Coast Flyer, that's bus rapid transit, what would you say to the many commuters out there who would never even think of taking the bus? We are a very car-dependent metropolitan area. You're trying to make public transportation more attractive to a wider number of people.
Definitely. I think that's the clear message here. For the past few years, we have taken steps to reduce and eliminate some of the barriers in terms of using the bus system. In this particular case, the First Coast Flyer buses are clearly branded. The stations are clearly identifiable. If you drive in our community and you go past a First Coast Flyer bus stop, you know and you distinctly see the difference. We also have heard about the directness. You know, our service was not very direct a few years ago. Kind of buses meandered through neighborhoods and things of that nature. So we did the major uplift in 2014 with the Route Optimization Initiative, where we totally revamped our route structure. Then we overlaid the first leg of First Coast Flyer. Now the second leg is coming in. Our system is more direct, faster, much more reliable. Our on-time performance is about 80%. When I first arrived 4 years ago, we were around 66%. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the First Coast Flyer is at 93%. That is in line with a dedicated right-of-way subway type operation, where you don't have traffic and bicyclists and pedestrians kind of impacting your operation. So we've made it easier to use.
And how does this expansion of the First Coast Flyer dovetail with JTA's bigger picture look at a regional transit system? When you look at the entire area and how you'd like to connect all of these nodes, what's the vision? Where are we going with all of that?
Clearly, the First Coast Flyer could be the backbone for a regional transportation network. The North Line, Southeast Line. The North Line obviously is right on the border. I mean, we cut the ribbon yesterday for the Armsdale Park and Ride lot. We've used it for Florida, Georgia. We used it for Navy Notre Dame, and we had commuters come from Nassau County and actually use that Armsdale Park and Ride lot to get to the events. So, with it opening up on December 5th. With the Blue Line opening, we are creating a network that can be clearly and easily utilized by folks outside of Duval County. And I think it gives choices we're not trying to eliminate automobile use. We're just trying to provide choices to our citizens in Northeast Florida.
And a lot of our listeners also know, Nat, that JTA has been deliberating for some time the future of the mainly downtown-based Jacksonville Skyway.
Yes.
Bring us up to date. What's going to happen to the Skyway?
Mm-hmm. So last year, we concluded our work with the Skyway Task Force, and we're going to be meeting with them in a couple of weeks. It's been 1 year of work since that decision was made to retain the Skyway and expand it. Now, looking at technology, looking at the needs of downtown and what's developing in and around downtown, the Skyway and the nomenclature Skyway speaks to the technology we have today. The work we've done in the past year is really identifying that there is clearly a need to make a shift to new technology, that in terms of driverless vehicles, vehicles that could not just operate on the elevated structure we currently have, but to quickly and in a reasonable fashion get to street level and operate in mixed traffic and be able to take people directly to where they want to go. So we've been working pretty hard this past year examining systems around the world. Attending driverless vehicle sessions and meetings, conventions, to really identify what technology needs to be in place 5 to 10 years from now. The current Skyway is good for another 5 years, but we do not want to make a decision today that locks us in and does not take advantage of the technologies that are right around the corner as we deal with downtown mobility.
I think it could be hard for people to wrap their heads around that we will see autonomous vehicles that could be public ones in the near future on our streets.
Well, I think we should be planning for that today, because while you may not see it readily available at this moment, there are pilots going on around the country, and there are actual operations around the world that are using autonomous vehicles, and we need to plan for, just like the Skyway was built 20, 30 years ago, the decisions we make today, if we do not account for these technological advances, we'll have something that'll be obsolete as soon as we build it.
We have a lot of tweets and emails for Nat Ford, CEO of JTA, but first, your calls, 549-2937. We're talking transit on the show this morning. David on the south side. Hi, David. Good morning.
Technological advances.
David, turn your radio down and go ahead.
We have a lot of tweets and emails.
Okay. Give us a call back, David. Jennifer on the south side. Hi, Jennifer. Good morning to you.
Hi.
Hey.
I would like to know what JTA is doing to improve customer service. A year ago, I was without a car for about a week and had to rely on the bus, and the customer service was just terrible, and being able to get bus passes was really difficult, and that the only way was to be able to go all the way downtown to get a 30-day pass. So I would like to hear them talk about what they're doing to deal with those obstacles to people using public transportation.
Okay, thanks, Jennifer. And that's a great question, because that's one that you typically get, I know, when you do this program. People see the system, even though I know you've worked so hard on streamlining things, as bulky sometimes, not customer-friendly. What about Jennifer's experience?
That is clearly one of the complaints that we have heard in the past, and with that, we launched this year MyJTA, so MyJTA app, so that infrequent users or our regular users, they do not have to go to a brick and mortar type facility to purchase a ticket. They can actually use their personal data device and download the app and purchase a ticket in the comforts of their home, for example. And so we have eliminated that issue in terms of having to go downtown to buy a pass with technology. And then moreover, adding more types of technology, such as the Wi-Fi on the buses, as well as real-time passenger information. So if you go to Next Bus and you pull up Jacksonville and the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, you can see every bus arrival and departure in our system. And then we have route planners now that are Google-based type route planners that help you, plan your trip.
Can you do all that through the app, MyJTA? Look at all the routes and just figure out where you need to go just through your smartphone app?
Yes, ma'am. And yeah. So we've added that technology back on December of 2015 with the launch of First Coast Flyer.
Hope that answers your question, Jennifer. Robert in St. Augustine. Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'd like to ask about sort of a two-part question. With the mainstay of mass transportation in every successful urban area, major metropolitan area, being subways or a train system, I'm curious as to why there's not more emphasis on trying to extend the branches of the Skyway out into the suburbs. I mean, to me, that would solve so many problems. And I'd like you to, you know, as far as technology goes, while I can, you know, I can kind of see the automated riderless cars or driverless cars being a thing of the future, what about something more substantive and immediate, like electric car charging kiosks spread throughout the city so people could drive their electric cars in and pump up an industry that's already booming? We could take advantage of that. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Robert.
Robert, very good points. And I think, you know, when we look at cities around the country, we've all been developed differently. Prior to coming to Jacksonville, I was in San Francisco. I started my career in New York, and those are mm-hmm. distinct and uniquely different cities than Jacksonville. The density in terms of residential and jobs, we're much more spread out. And so when you talk about hard infrastructure like a subway line or light rail, we're not there yet because we don't have the densities to really justify that major capital investment to build those types of
When you talk to people like the local regional planning council, they look at when we're going to reach that density.
Yes.
What's the timetable on that?
Well, you know, that really has to do a lot with the development in and around Jacksonville. I think to his question, you mentioned the Skyway. It would be great to have a fixed guideway type system like that throughout our community, but we need to make sure that it's a good use of taxpayers' dollars and not and something that would be underutilized because of our great road system and things of that nature. Transit has a challenge in our community. We're making it much more reliable, much more attractive, but it's very difficult to compete with some of the infrastructure we have out there that supports automobiles.
So Mick tweets the show. This may lead us into his question. Is there any chance for a light rail system to the beaches, town center, downtown, and the airport? along I-10, I-95, JTB. Based on what you just said, I'm thinking you're going to say no, even though people ask a lot about that.
Yeah, the immediate answer is we're not ready for it. The great intermediary step that we're making is with First Coast Flyer, which is going to operate much like a rail system with the with dedicated lanes, with transit signal priority, with upscale and clearly identified bus stops that are much further apart. And so we are building the infrastructure and the development pattern for rail to be available sometime in the future. Mm-hmm. But I think there's going to be some time that needs to pass before we're ready for light rail.
Here's another tweet for you. Is he watching the Hyperloop development, the link to Orlando, Miami, Tampa, Atlanta, and D.C.? Let's explain what that is.
Well, I guess Elon Musk's concept of developing this Hyperloop system that will rival airlines in terms of transporting people. Interestingly enough, we watch all of those types of innovations as it relates to transportation to look and see how they will actually potentially solve issues in our community. I know there's a great deal of work as it relates to Florida East Coast and All Aboard Florida, looking at creating rail connections between all of those cities. In terms of his Hyperloop concept, I think it's going to be a wait and see on that. It may not help us in Jacksonville in terms of our in-county operation, but clearly between large cities, that's something of the future, and we're excited about all of the interest in transportation.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, for Nat Ford of JTA. Conrad is on the north side. Conrad, hello. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not a bus rider. I haven't ridden a bus since the first year of consolidation, probably. But I hear people complain on the north side or raise a question. About 2 years ago, they seem to have eliminated the entire corridor that ran out North Main Street. He talks about Lim Turner Road. North Main Street, I know from Bush Drive, Duns Avenue, past Cedar Bay, Broad River, San Mateo, Eastport, Ocean Way. There is no evidence of any way to access a bus anywhere for miles along there where there used to be a bus that ran that route. Is there a reason why that was eliminated?
Okay, so what we, 2 years ago with the Route Optimization Initiative, and I think, we've had to share this with a lot of our riders and customers, we are able to collect data at every bus stop in the system, every bus in terms of people actually getting on and off at every bus stop. And what we were finding in certain communities, because residential areas had changed or job locations had changed, the route structure that was built largely 30 years ago was very inefficient. The ridership was actually declining. People were complaining that it wasn't direct enough. And again, the meandering and trying to make sure we picked up everyone at every corner. And with that, we had a system that was very unattractive. It was a last resort in terms of transportation. What we did within, our finances, within our budget, we rearranged. We totally restructured the route system to take people where they needed to go faster and more direct. And what we tried to do is make sure that we left no area abandoned. But at the same time, by trying to cover every corner of our community, and in some cases we had bus stops that would see one passenger a day, for almost a year, and some of our routes were very low productive routes. We understand the importance of providing transportation to everyone, but we've got to do it in a very effective and efficient way. And in this case, some of our customers have to walk a little bit further to get to a bus stop, but then that bus is actually much more frequent every 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, rather than every hour trying to cover the entire community. So that's the challenge that we have to balance out.
David in Mandarin. Hey, David, thanks for holding. Good morning.
Yes, I'd like to ask about your budgets over the past few years. You know, when a new development comes on, there's money for the utilities. Why aren't you, or are you getting money for the buses? Also, I don't think your budget is increasing, so you have to take from the past lines to go to the new ones. And to measure ridership, for what there is of a need really isn't fair, because it takes 2 hours to go, like, from the north side to Sunbeam in the past. I don't know what it is now, but your frequency and reliability is a direct result of income for those in need of jobs. If you aren't there, the income suffers. And really, we need to support the buses a lot more than we do, and it needs to be reliable and frequent. Thank you very much.
All right, David. Thanks for that. And we do need to also point out, you're still looking at a potential fare hike for riders next spring, correct?
So, I think the caller raises a very good point. We are fortunate. We do receive funding from sales tax, local option gas tax, and our fare box. And we recently were asked by our board to take a look at our actual fares as it relates to covering the cost of the JTA. We've tried to maintain a relatively flat budget year after year. We've had some major initiatives, you know, route optimization and some other things that has increased our budget, you know, on an annual basis. But overall, we've been pretty close to flat for the last few years. But the challenge we have is, as new development occurs and we see increasing ridership, you know, mm-hmm. costs increase, and we'd love to add more service, more frequent service. What we've tried to do is as best as we can to try and hold those costs as flat as possible. But one thing that we look at is other revenue opportunities in terms of increasing revenue for the JTA. We look at our property holdings and being able to leverage those. We're looking at leasing properties and things of that nature. And the idea is to increase our revenues. As it relates to fares, we're going to do whatever we can to hold our fares as flat as possible, because we know what kind of impact that has on our customers. We've seen a 4% increase in ridership for the last 2 years. We cherish that growth, and we want to make sure that as we deliberate whether we will implement a fare increase this spring or not, that we cover all bases. No rocket will be left unturned before we make that final decision.
And single trip fares would go up maybe a quarter. It wouldn't be a huge hike.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's the challenge. You know, unfortunately, in our industry, and we've seen it have negative impacts, we wait until we get to extremely dire straits before we make adjustment in cost, because we're trying to protect our riders. The challenge we have with that is, and as the caller mentioned, you see a slow reduction in service. You see increases in frequency. So, you know, the bus is not as regular as it needs to be because of maintenance issues. And so what we're trying to do is examine what is the right moment to make a small incremental increase to continue to maintain a high level of service.
Here's a comment for you on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Now that there are fewer stops, let's improve the ones that are left. And Amtrak needs to be brought back from the boondocks. For years now, there's been talk of a downtown transit hub that would incorporate bus, train, maybe even rail. That has been on the back burner, it seems, for a long time. Is that ever going to come to fruition?
It is at the front of the burner.
Oh, really?
Okay, it's at the front of the burner. The JRTC plan and concept has been approved by the JTA board. That was done last year. We signed an agreement with Greyhound, and we're relocating Greyhound from its current location over to the JRTC location.
And that will be at the convention center?
That's at the convention center in the La Villa area. We will be building a multimodal regional transportation center that will house Greyhound, Megabus, the JTA fixed route bus service. Our First Coast Flyer will connect there. Park and ride for customers, drop off for customers that may be using our system, and we already have the Skyway connected at that end of the city.
What about Amtrak?
Now, in terms of Amtrak, earlier this year we applied for a grant to do track work that would allow us to facilitate Amtrak relocating from its current location to downtown. We weren't successful in receiving that grant from the federal government. The good news is, just about 3 weeks ago, there's going to be another round of grant applications. We're competing with cities around the country, and it's our hope that we'll be able to get the funding to be able to do that track work, which will lead to that relocation. So things are working. Things are moving, and not years. I think it's about a decade or so that has been sort of a wish. Well, the dream is coming true now.
Richard on the West Side. Hi, Richard. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, folks. My concern is back to the Skyway here. We're looking to revitalize downtown and everything, and we need residences, but residents are very dependent on transit, and they don't want to have to own automobiles and everything. And it seems like after a year's study and all the new tech that's out there and everything like that, I attended the meeting at the library. I was a little disappointed that there wasn't more said about what's being talked about in terms of extending the thing. I mean, it was mentioned and everything, but it just was not really. It sounds like we're going to be waiting for another year or two, another study or something like that. And I'm kind of, discouraged that we're studied to death and, no federal funds, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard.
I think the caller raises a very good question, and it gives me an opportunity to really share, our thoughts on the Skyway. The major question, which was answered last year, was whether to keep the Skyway or tear it down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that decision was very clear that downtown and the development of downtown that's reoccurring and that is planned and is happening is real. So the Skyway is necessary. There's also the decision of extending it. And so that decision has been made in terms of extending it. To simply take the Skyway as it currently exists and build more aerial structure, replicate the existing cars that we have today, would be a terrible decision. I think we need to take advantage of the changing technologies that are coming in the future, look at an opportunity to expand it much further than we ever dreamed of by using some of the new technologies out there. As the JTA and using taxpayer dollars, both federal, state, and local, we have to be judicious and make very good business decisions to make sure that we're not moving too fast or not fast enough, because we could end up with another Skyway situation, which was a major investment over 30 years ago that did not bear the fruit that was planned at that time. So we are deliberately trying to not make the same mistake. And with the advent of technology and the things that we see coming down the road, so to speak, why not time this in a way that we can take advantage of what appears to be occurring in terms of autonomous vehicles and things of that nature. So, and let's develop a financial plan that allows us to take it from A to Z and not have to stop in the middle of the alphabet because we ran out of funding and really didn't think the whole thing through.
In the meantime, the new First Coast Flyer line, the Blue Line, starts December 5th, and as you said, Nat Ford, just download the app MyJTA to buy tickets and look at the schedules.
That's right. MyJTA and NextBus. Not MyJTA and NextBus, and those two systems will make it easier for you, especially if you're not a regular rider, to understand our system and maybe take advantage of it.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later in the hour. Some weekend events for your calendar, including early thanks from our own Swamp Radio. But up next, celebrity chef Kenny Gilbert.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist. Let all of us at WJCT take a moment to express our thanks and gratitude to you. Your support of WJCT this year has helped bring the best in news, drama, performance, ideas, and culture to all across the First Coast. And thanks to you, we intend to accomplish even more in the year to come. Our best wishes to you for a wonderful Thanksgiving and holiday season.
The next thing I know, my shoulder's getting banged on so violently. And it's Foxy. And she's got four people with her. Foxy's from Brooklyn. I mean, I live in Brooklyn and I love Brooklyn, but Foxy's from Brooklyn.
Join us next time for more True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich.
WJCT and FSCJ Artist Series present an intimate conversation with Lydia Bastianich, host of PBS's Lydia's Kitchen. The event is Saturday, December 3rd at 8 p.m. at the Times Union Center. Join us for an evening of conversation and storytelling, celebrating our love of Italian food. VIP tickets available. Ticket info at fscjartistseries.org.
So join me. Life is a combination of magic and pasta. Noi che felicia.
Welcome back. Kenny Gilbert first became a celebrity chef when he appeared on one of TV's top cooking competitions, Top Chef. Since then, Gilbert has opened and run two popular local restaurants, Gilbert's Underground Kitchen in Fernandina Beach and Gilbert's Social, a new place on Southside Boulevard. But he's got plans for even more. Chef Kenny gives us a little taste of what's in store next year on the local dining scene as he joins us in studio. And good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Good seeing you as well.
I had the chance to go to Gilbert's Social the other night for dinner. Great new place on Jacksonville South Side. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You've done so much to add to the local dining scene since you had such a great turn on Top Chef. I can't believe that's been 6 years now. 2010.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were able to parlay that appearance on that show to this incredible new business here in our area, the two restaurants, as I mentioned, but you have more planned, which was so interesting to hear about. What else is on your plate, Chef Kenny?
Well, the goal was to create some neighborhood Southern dining that's affordable, fun, and craveable for our local community. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you always have to have a vision. You have to have a, you know, you have to dream big, right? So the goal is to open up a larger commissary kind of facility that will be able to help take care of running multiple small barbecue places throughout Northeast Florida.
So people can go into your commissary, buy meats, and then take them back to their restaurants? Is that how it will work?
No, the way it will work is that the front part of the store would be kind of like what we do in Fernandina, where you have counter service. You walk up, place your order, get your rib sandwich, your pulled pork, brisket, mm-hmm. Buy your meats by the pound, your sides. But then the back of the facility would be doing all the production. So the goal would be to open up small stores that not necessarily has a large space, but we would be able to do the production at this commissary and then feed that store. So, for example, if the commissary would be off of Powers University is the goal, but then say we decide to open up one in Jack's Beach and maybe we found a little 1,000-square-foot store, that commissary would be able to feed that particular location.
Pretty cool vision. How'd you come up with that?
Yeah. Well, when I was at the Lodge at Sea Island, we had a commissary for the entire resort. And I ended up working with some of the local cooks and the chefs at that commissary and gave them my recipes, you know, for my barbecue sauces, stocks, greens, things like that. And then we would just requisition those items that I had already created. So it was like having a cook, one of my cooks already at the other facility. So we would reduce labor in that manner, and then it was a lot more consistent. So mm-hmm. the more technical items we had to deal with at our restaurant at that time, we could work on that, but knowing that the bulk items came in consistently.
With Gilbert Social, you've expanded your love of Southern cooking and barbecue and smoked meats. It's sort of a fusion kind of menu, new Southern cooking, I guess, that people really are responding to.
Yeah, you know, the goal was to, you know, my mom is from St. Augustine, so my roots tie in here. My dad was from Chicago, so I learned barbecue from him. So we wanted to have a place that is not necessarily seen out there too much, where you have great Southern fare and also barbecue under one roof. And Gilbert Social, you know, off of Southside is a great location. It's very easy to get into. It's a freestanding building. Mm-hmm. We have about 52 seats. So if you had a party of six or eight, you know, you can come in. It's a very sociable environment. So that's kind of what we call the Gilbert Social, because we want people to kind of feel comfortable and kind of listen to some good music and have some good food.
There have been a lot of new restaurants in the last few years here in Northeast Florida. How would you describe the food scene here compared to when you were just starting out? I think your first job was at the Ritz-Carlton on Amelia Island.
Oh, my gosh.
A long time ago. Not many, a super long time ago, but some time back.
Yeah. Well, I think it's amazing. I think when Matthew left as the chef of the grill to open up Matthew's, I think...
Matthew Madure.
I think that was a huge surge for the city. And, you know, back then, you think about 24 Miramar, you think about Dolphin Depot, First Street Grill. There was a lot of those restaurants that had a great name, reputation. And now you have, like, Jonathan and Senna, you know, Tom Gray, Sam and Kylie Efron from Taverna. Uh-huh. These guys locally are doing some great food with, you know, at Black Sheep and Orsay and Moxie and Taverna and things like that. And so it's great competition, you know, in a sense, because, you know, these chefs have a great passion. So they're educating the locals with different ingredients that they feel great about seasonally. So if you see Sea Island red peas on a dish at Intuition with Black Sheep, then if I put Sea Island peas on a menu, they're going to say, oh, yeah, I had that over at Intuition. And someone's already been educating them about the product that maybe they never heard before.
Does the First Coast have a signature cuisine? What did you think, for example, when the baseball team changed their name to Jumbo Shrimp?
I thought it was a joke. I thought it was. I saw Nikki on Facebook, and she was
Nikki
Kimbleton.
Oh, at Channel 4.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, she's got to be joking. And then I realized that it wasn't a joke.
No, it's real.
The shrimp, I would have to say, you know, our local shrimp is amazing. I don't think enough local chefs use it enough. Honestly. Mm-hmm. But I think if there's that one thing that you could say really is ours, it would be the local shrimp, you know?
Yeah. And you use some of that in your cooking.
Oh, all of it. Yeah. Yeah. Local. Yeah. Our shrimp and grits. We have a shrimp pho that we do. Mm-hmm. So we get it, you know, whole. We do a shrimp boil that we do in the summer, which is great with a local shrimper. So
what advice do you have? You become a culinary star, and I know a lot of young chefs look up to you. I've seen them post pictures of you when you visit their restaurants. They get all excited that Chef Kenny stopped in to see what they're doing. What advice do you have for people coming up in this industry behind you?
You know, that is not easy. It's a labor of love. If you don't love it, don't waste your time. I mean, when I say love it, I mean long hours, hot conditions, working with sharp utensils, dealing with some people that don't necessarily care, being judged and critiqued every second of the day. Mm-hmm. You have to have a thick skin. You have to be passionate about what you believe in, but you have to have a strong work ethic. If you don't, then you shouldn't waste your time.
Well, you definitely have a strong work ethic, and it's always a pleasure to see you. And kudos on all the success. I know there'll be more to come. He's Chef Kenny Gilbert. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
A quick break, and up next, weekend events, including a preview of Early Thanks, Swamp Radio's new show.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're going instrument shopping at Home Depot.
Like renovated the bathrooms and the kitchens,
and that's where I come, renovate my music.
The world is an instrument, according to Brazilian percussionist Ciro Baptista. That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Enjoy the farmers markets of Provence, where there's plenty you can buy during harvest season.
Figs and apples and pears and an incredible array of mushrooms.
Get a taste of what makes Hungarian food so hearty and well-spiced.
There's paprika, there's all kinds of spices coming into your mouth, and it's beautiful.
And explore what's being done to end hunger around the world on the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday mornings at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Today's segment with Carrie Speckman is brought to you in part by Blue Bamboo Asian Kitchen.
This time of year, you can call me Sara Lee. Life is pie, and pie is life. Take two pieces, it's twice as nice. Life is pie, and pie is life.
Isn't that the truth? Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Swamp Radio Jax, back and just in time for Thanksgiving. That's a little sample of Early Thanks, a show that will be on stage this weekend for the second year in a row. Not just music, though. It will also feature a Southern-style Thanksgiving dinner followed by a radio show live from the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Swamp Radio creator Ian Mayers and Chef Stephen Damari here now to tell us all about Early Thanks and give a little thanks in advance. Hey, guys.
Good morning, and pie is life.
that is profound, I gotta say.
I worship
say.
At the Church of Pie.
I know, nothing bad about pie.
Amen.
No, nothing bad about that.
And that was Duffy Bishop, St. Augustine blues entertainer, singing that wonderful song that was created specifically for the show.
Tell us about Early Thanks. Now, this is the second year you've done this show.
It is. Stephen and I have been collaborating on things for a couple of years, and I'm crazy about the food he makes. And I said, listen, can we have a swamp show and take Thanksgiving and turn it on its ear a little? So we take these traditional Thanksgiving staples we see at the table, and Stephen riffs on them the way a jazz musician would. Like, give us some examples, Mr. Damari.
Oh, yeah. We've got just an incredible meal for this Saturday. We've got the wood chopped, the smoker's getting going early. We've got roasted garlic and sage stuffed turkey.
We have
a southern pineapple bread pudding. We're doing a special
pineapple bread pudding. I've never heard of that.
It's incredible.
We could not keep it on the table last year. It was called pineapple stuff. Did you get some?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Are these all your recipes?
And no, a lot of these are taken from my dad, other members of my family.
And also Ned Pollock of Ned's Southside Kitchen and Gypsy Cab fame.
Uh-huh.
And Terry Gamble of the Blue Hen Cafe is making cranberry cupcakes.
And what kind of pie?
She's making a vegan dark chocolate coconut pie.
Wow.
And also we have pumpkin bars.
Not pumpkin pie?
No, because, you know, this group likes to walk around and travel. It's a very social affair.
Sure.
So we're looking for food you can hold in your hand. And a lot of people have a festive beverage in the other, so there's no room for a fork.
Finger food on Thanksgiving. How about that?
Yeah. And we have a bunch of other fun recipes, too. We're doing a special smoked Gouda grits with white chocolate as a garnish, which is phenomenal. We've got a roasted poblano candied cornbread, which is also just
I can just
fantastic.
Picture all these people in their homes going,
I know, right? And this is all kind of southern flavored Thanksgiving dinner.
Absolutely.
It sounds like.
Yeah,
this
South.
Is just like the show. So people will come and eat under the stars at the St. Augustine Amphitheater, under the trees, I should say, and then listen to the show. What's in the show?
Oh, well, we have some great acts lined up. Of course, we have our audience favorite, Derek Coughlin, explaining an Irishman's approach to American Thanksgiving.
that'll be amusing.
We have a story in Mark Little who says, you know, the first Thanksgiving was actually really in St. Augustine. Between Spaniards and Indians.
Way ahead of the Pilgrims.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And then we have some really heartwarming stories, which we always have every year, where people talk about those things which gather us together as human beings, which is what the show has always explored and is particularly prescient at this time.
And we need to point out, if you love Swamp Radio, you need to go see Early Thanks, because after this show, Swamp Radio is going to be taking some time off. So this is a big opportunity for your fans.
Absolutely. We're going on hiatus in 2017. What started out as a fluke in a loft in Riverside turned into a show, and then 3 years and 12 episodes and then 160 artists we featured. So my crew, which is mostly volunteer, is in need of a much deserved break, and we're going to give them that for the year.
But first, we're throwing a big party.
And we're going to pig out.
It's going to be a great way to ease into the Thanksgiving holiday. Swamp Radio with its second annual Early Thanks. Now, this is Saturday night at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Doors open at 6, dinner at 7, and the performance at 8 o'clock. You need to get your tickets now. SwampRadioJax.com. So you can enjoy all this talent here in Northeast Florida. And by the way, we'll air the broadcast later right here on 89.9.
Yes, and so, wear your eating clothes. And you know what I mean.
Yeah, come ready to eat and enjoy. Ian Mayers and Chef Stephen DeMari, congratulations, guys. What an artistic and culinary achievement for you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
That's Swamp Radio. Early Thanks, Saturday night at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. And finally, this hour, some other ideas we've got right now for your weekend. From Bob Dylan, Savion Glover, and more, here as she is every Thursday to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, TheSpectator.com's Carrie Speckman.
Yay!
Here today.
Wow, got a lot of applause today.
Got some fans in studio. Ian, well, Stephen, feel free to chime in on Carrie's ideas for
you. You didn't
weekend.
Let me chime in on theirs.
Oh,
JK.
Oh, snap.
Okay, doesn't that sound like fun though, Swamp Radio?
Totally.
Early Thanks.
I'm like, first I have to listen to Kenny, who has the best fried chicken I've ever had in my life.
Chef Kenny Gilbert.
Hashtag spectator approved. And then I have to listen to this delicious dish over here.
Uh-huh.
Very hungry.
I know. I'm feeling it. I'm going to lunch early with David Luckin today, by the way. I'm gonna be dealing with this. We're out the door at 11:30 sharp.
Oh, lucky you.
I know. Because, yeah, they did whet my appetite.
They did.
Now, let's talk about some other stuff.
Let's talk about more food.
Speaking of more food items, tomorrow night, a couple of things. Festival Divine in Treaty Oak Park and the St. John's Riverkeeper's 15th Annual Oyster Roast. Two
yes.
delicious events, my friend.
And they are both fundraisers. And at Festival Divine, they will be having 100 poured wines. You don't have to drink them all. In fact, you probably couldn't. But that is not a challenge. And they have 20 restaurants, craft beer. And I would venture to say the most prolifically performing musical act in Jacksonville, the Chris Thomas Band.
Where are they not? Live.
They are everywhere. They're now, on porches. They're on TV.
This benefits Catholic Charities.
Correct. Yes.
Friday
it's
night.
Treaty Oak Park.
Also Friday, go support the Riverkeeper with their delicious oyster roast.
Yes, it's a big deal. It's a really cool thing they have out on the river. Excuse me, at the Women's Club. It's quite an event.
Okay. Now, I want everyone to give me their thoughts on Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee Bob Dylan, who is coming to the Times Union Center Friday night. And as yet, I think he has not even acknowledged his
Nobel Prize.
No, he did a little Twitter thing, sort of acknowledged it.
Yeah,
it was very chill and low-key.
And he won a Pulitzer Prize. Did you know that?
Yeah. He's won just about every major prize
and
you can
the presidential,
win.
What is that, award? The one the president gives?
Where Kennedy Center Honors,
yeah.
Right?
I was like, what?
Yeah. This is one night only at the TU Center.
And I still can't understand a word he says.
He is coming to the Times Union Center tomorrow night. I didn't even realize that he was in town.
You know what? That's what I'm here for, Melissa.
I know. That's why I'm here. That's why you're here.
Yeah, you'll be at Times Union Center.
All right. Tomorrow night, also at the Florida Theater, the Tony Award-winning Savion Glover.
You didn't say Hoofer. I know it's the favorite part.
No.
He's
Tony
amazing.
Award-winning Hoofer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he will be here. And this is interesting because he's going to be accompanied by an 8-piece orchestra and jazz quartet. So he's going to be dancing to classical favorites by Bach, Mozart, and Vivaldi.
Oh, very cool.
Among, you know, jazz.
Yeah, there's so much happening this weekend. Man.
I know.
I can't even get over this weekend.
Can't even.
Right, let's talk about one or a couple more other things. Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas showing this weekend. That's a creepy classic.
The symphony is playing the soundtrack.
With the symphony.
Live.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the symphony has done an excellent job.
I'll tell you what.
Putting these evenings together.
They have. They are really reaching out to the people. We have Cork. I'm sure you're familiar with Cork. Arts District. They're having open studios on Saturday. That's a big deal because there's, I guess, hundreds of artists in there. 70, excuse me. 70 artists. And it's not just a place you can walk in. And even if you did, all the artists wouldn't be there. But they do demos. You can talk to the artists. It's from noon to 8. It's between 6 buildings. Super cool.
It's going to be incredible for sure.
Yeah. Super cool event.
Yeah, the 2016 Cork Arts District Open Studios event Saturday, and then right nearby there, Saturday night, the Riverside Wine
Fest. A lot
Fest.
Of wine going on this weekend.
Wine is flowing, yeah.
A lot of wine, yeah. Riverside, I almost said Liverside.
that's actually probably Riverside a much better liquors. Way to describe that area.
Is it? Yes.
Yeah.
It's their annual wine fest. The proceeds are donated to Riverside Avenue Preservation. They will have more than 300 wines. And again, not a challenge to drink them all. Just letting you know.
We're getting tweets about the Spectator. Is it time for the pank hair? The answer is yes.
Time what? Time for it to go away?
No.
For me to be here?
It means that it's your time. It's your time to shine.
I'm here.
She's here.
I don't know that I'm shining, but I'm here. And the Wine Fest is in what they're now calling the King Street District. I didn't even know it had a name. I think they're blocking part of the street between Park and College, maybe.
That area has a name now.
Yeah, it's the what did I just say? King Street
District. The King Street District. Okay.
Yes. I guess we're all
like
the
five
it's legit.
Minutes from Cork. That's yeah. like 5 minutes
is.
From Cork Studios.
I mean, that's like you could take the JTA flyer or something.
The trolley. The holiday trolley.
Everyone's got ideas. I love it.
You could take Schuber, as my brother likes to call it. Funny kid.
Go to thespectator.com for more ideas for your weekend. And as always, have fun out there. Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. It's been a pleasure and an inconvenience.
I was waiting for that. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. And never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or the WJCT app. Next on Diane Rehm, President-elect Donald Trump is selecting members of his cabinet, but the transition has been turbulent. Who's in the running for top positions and what Trump's choices could say about how he will lead the country? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. for our Friday roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.